Hello and welcome to another episode of the Big Nickel IDP podcast. I am your host, John Macri, PFF's IDP specialist and data analyst. This episode, we're doing something a little different because instead of focusing on the IDP side of fantasy football, we're going to shift our focus for this episode and talk about a brand new version of fantasy football called All 22, which some of you may have heard of by now, a platform that has seized a rare opportunity to completely kind of revolutionize and evolve fantasy football with an entirely new and innovative way of playing the game that we love. So, I don't know about you, but I feel like talking All 22. Let's get it. I am excited to dive into this episode and discuss all the things that make All 22 great and exciting and cover what it is and strategies, etc. And luckily for everyone listening, I don't have to do that by myself because joining me, someone who is just as excited about this platform as I am from DynastyLeagueFootball.com and first ballot IDP content Hall of Famer, Mr. Tom Kislingberry is back on the show. Tom, how are you, my friend?
Really good, thanks, buddy. Yeah, I am feeling good. We were just talking about this off air. I had two options. I was either going to do something today or last night, and you made me go to the pub last night. So I've been hungover all day, and I'm finally getting a little bit of energy back. So I'm super happy talking about football. You know what? Can I take us off target straight away? Sorry, when you were talking,
go ahead.
PFF's IDP expert. So I've got a question. You obviously work with all guys at PFF, and sure, we can talk about this with All 22 today, because one of the biggest things that we see in IDP, right, is people go, oh, it's weird, it's this small thing. And our argument is normally IDP is for football fans. Offense only football, where you only follow six players out of 22 on the field, is just for people who watch the ball a little bit. I don't want to be rude about them. Anyone can watch what they want. But two questions. One, is anybody else at PFF an IDP person? Don't name names, but I'm interested in that. And secondly, the question that sort of feeds that is, do you have that weird sort of schism at PFF between people that just care about offensive players and really like skill players? Or is it just because of who you are as a company, everyone likes everyone on the field?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as far as like the data side goes, I think like everybody, like, so I work on both sides, right? I work on our content side doing IDP, and I work on our data analytics side. So that kind of gives me a rare chance to see both sides of PFF as what they are. But from the data side, I think everybody kind of appreciates like all positions, right? Even like offensive line, we get a lot of love with offensive linemen and stuff like that, which isn't fantasy related until All 22
until
came
now.
Along, that is, right? but yeah, we definitely get the appreciation there. And I think on the content side, there is like our NFL guys, like the Steve Palazzolos and Sam Monsons and Mike Renner, et cetera. Like those guys, they dive into all positions. So I think they do appreciate it more. Fantasy wise, I think, you know, I think there's a little bit of IDP appreciation, like a very small amount. I know Nathan Yonke and Dwayne McFarland both play a little bit of IDP. I don't know if Ian Harditz does. I haven't actually asked him, but yeah, it's like the like fantasy football world in general, right? It's a very small corner, and I think our, like, yep, even our PFF fantasy like social media team kind of shows that as well. I don't get the IDP graphics made of my rankings and stuff like everybody else, which could be a good thing, so I don't have the masses coming from my head, but yeah, it's still super niche even within
PFF. Yeah, you can drop your Micah Parsons at LB13 with impunity, and right, nobody wants to burn down your house.
Yeah, that would definitely set the fantasy world on fire, I'm sure. Because
all right, anyway, sorry for derailing us. I didn't plan on doing that at all, but I'm filled with excitement now. Yeah, so All 22, you sort of touched on there, right? We're going to talk about offensive line. Now, hands up, I've been watching football for about 25 years, and for most of that time, I've said, look, I don't claim to know anything about the offensive line. I don't follow it. I don't watch it. I can't follow every single player. It's just not enough. And I like to pretend I don't talk about players that I don't really know and make stuff up. So, and I'm studying hard because you suddenly got, you know, there's another 150 players that you've got to be really familiar with and understand how they rank and how they fit together and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Like offensive line, I think, yeah, you're right. Specifically, like that's the one like position group as a whole that a lot of people don't really know a lot about. They'll see like highlights and they'll see lowlights of offensive linemen, but everything in between kind of just gets lost in the void, right? We don't know what these players are doing and what they look like on a consistent basis. We know, you know, when somebody posts a clip on Twitter of them either giving up a sack or pancaking a defensive lineman, right? Those are the things that we see, and we make our assumptions based on that with offensive line. But the good thing, I think, for offensive line for fantasy purposes and using the PFF data is that it's one of the positions that we really get to see them graded on a play-by-play basis. Like we see that for every position, but like for cornerbacks, for example, they're graded when they're targeted for the most part, right? Where offensive linemen, they're going head to head with a defensive lineman or pass rusher, whoever, on a regular basis. So their grades, I find, are really really good to kind of to look at as far as like judging who's good and who's not. And they're pretty consistent as well. So that's always nice to see with that position.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And linemen are hard because quite often you talk to people and, you know, most football people are fans of a certain team and you talk about a certain player, offensive lineman is pretty easy. And you go, this guy gives up a lot of pressure. And they go, no, he doesn't. I watch every game. He doesn't. And they're probably right. On 90% of snaps, they're probably not giving up pressure and messing anything up. But, you know, giving up pressure on 10% of your snaps is really bad. So a disastrous game is giving up 10 pressures, right? I mean, that would be absurd if you did that out of 65 plays. So whatever 55 is divided by 65, my addled brain can't do it today. But this is why the world was so different before PFF, because you didn't know. You have no idea. Even if you watch every game, you know, in real time, you can't watch every player. Quite often people say, oh, yeah, I watched that certain player. And I go, oh, yeah. We didn't really, because you're just watching your team and they're on the screen, but either you're watching your own offense and therefore you're not watching the defense, you're watching their defense, in which case you're less qualified to talk about your own offense, or you can watch more than one thing at a time. And people always go, yeah, I can do that. And you go, brilliant, I'll show you a play. Go back, tell me where X lined up or what he was doing. And you go, I've got no idea, because you can't do it. Human brains can't do that. We have to focus. We're predators. Yeah. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. Let's get back to all 22.
But no, you're right, though, right? That's kind of the beauty of what we do at PFF. And I know not everybody agrees with the grades and whatever, but, you know, we could look at every single play from multiple angles and have multiple sets of eyes on it through different processes to kind of come up with a collective grade on a player. So it's definitely different than just watching somebody through broadcast on a Sunday and saying, you know, this guy looked like he was playing real well out there. What did PFF grade him? And then they're surprised when he actually didn't grade that well. So,
yeah, I mean, I know I keep going off on these sidetracks. I think it's a really good exercise for anybody listening home, who I assume is a fan of defense, to just have a go, not necessarily grading, but actually just doing a little bit of charting. Just pick a drive and go on the defensive side. Who's on the field? How are they changing their personnel? How are they lining up? Why is this linebacker in the slot over here? Why is it? And you'll notice really, really quickly that players are way less predictable and solid than you think they are. You know, so people draw up their little defenses in the summer of 11 defenders in this little Madden package. And football just doesn't look like that, which sounds stupid, but it doesn't. And as soon as you work through it play by play, you'd realize that instantly.
Yeah. And I think actually a good example of like people realizing that how different it is like when we do our part-time hiring waves in the off season, is we get a bunch of people that sign on to kind of do like player participation, for example. So it's exactly that. It's charting which players line up where on the field every single play. And you get a ton of football fans that apply. Everybody loves watching football. And then they start to get into it and they realize that this is a lot harder than what I expected. And because a lot changes play to play, right? You can't just type in, you know, Micah Parsons is lined up at linebacker and then lock that in for the next rest of the drive, right? You pretty much have to be changing that every single time. And I think that becomes a lot for people. So only, you know, the people that are really kind of focused in on that stuff and love it are the ones that that stay on. So it's a lot of work, but we enjoy it for sure.
Have you heard that old Thomas Dimitrov story? I think it's in a Patriots book. And he says when he started at the Patriots, you know, he was sent off by Belichick to chart out some stuff. And he went and did that. And he gave it to Belichick. And he went, no, I want you to do it this way. And sat down with him and like watched every play 20 times and was writing down to within 10 centimeters where people were lining up. And Dimitrov's going, I'll never see my family again. I can't do this. This is going to be my life. And that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we have such a big team of people here, right? Because it takes a literal army to kind of chart everything that we do. So I'm glad that All22 is using the PFF data. There's nothing else out there quite like it. I may be slightly biased, but I don't believe that there's anything that comes close. So it makes it pretty cool for fantasy purposes to be able to kind of see how those grades affect our like fantasy scores now for this platform. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, we'll talk about All22, what it is, how it works, what makes it different from our typical fantasy leagues, scoring strategies. We'll talk a little bit about positional scarcity, all of that kind of stuff. So I hope everyone is excited as we are. So we'll jump into it. And actually, before I even do that, there is a promo code for anybody that does want to give this a try. I'll say it again at the end. But if you use the promo code IDPshow, all one word, you'll get 40% off All22 access. And that gives you really what we're going to go into, a truly unique kind of dynasty experience, jam-packed with features. The guys, Bobby, Ray, and Chris, designed a really gorgeous website and platform to play on. There's PFF data included in there as well, which is something you would need a PFF subscription for most of the time. So, and it'll give you unlimited league access, which you love to see. So, with that being said, we will get into it and I guess start with what it is, right? So it's basically what we've kind of been talking about. It's a dynasty fantasy football experience that allows for every single position, including offensive linemen for the first time, where player scoring is based on their actual on-field performance using like those PFF grades. And luckily there's nobody out there that disagrees with the PFF grading system. So that should make everybody universally happy as well. Right. So again, kind of unbiased as I can be. I think using the PFF grades makes the most sense if you're going to build a true kind of on-field performance-based fantasy football platform that doesn't just rely on those counting stats, right? There's so much more that goes into what makes a good football player than just what they do in the box score.
Yeah, there's nothing else that does that. And you talked about counting stats there as well. We should probably talk about that. So most people by now have come to realize that the IDP side of things is way more dominated by volume than even 5 years ago we thought it was. You know, for linebackers and safeties in particular, volume equals scoring. It's just minor variations and usage on that. Cornerback is not that far away, frankly. Defensive line is a bit different because pass rush is about skill more than volume, blah, blah, blah. But that when you talk about that on the offensive side as well, volume is way more important than I used to think it was. So running backs, touches equals yardage, and then you'd get touchdown percentage that varies, but even quarterbacks as well. And we talk about quarterback as the most important position in football, and the gradation between your Patrick Mahomes and your Tuas is wildly different, unless you're Tyreek Hill, in which case you got it a little bit wrong way. But if you look at just, you know, volume of attempts versus yardage, it's like a straight line. So all of the stuff that we see on a weekly basis, sort of minor variation on a large data set. So look, we love football, we love fantasy football, but the biggest problem is it basically measures how much players play, not how good they are. Yeah. So, you know, I've been waiting for something like this for years. In fact, shout out a couple of people. Someone raised an old Twitter chat with me this week and said, look, we were talking about this thing 3 years ago where we were like talking about manually using PFF grades for offensive linemen and building a league on it. And this is basically that. So, you know, I've literally been waiting for years for this to happen.
Yeah. I've had a few people reach out to me, like even before I knew that this product existed like before we beta tested it last year. And yeah, it's the same thing. A lot of people, I think they're interested in this. And even if it's just finding a way to work offensive linemen into fantasy by themselves, right? People have been interested in that. I think there's something to be said about the IDP community. If we're playing with defensive players, we're obviously a little bit more into the degenerate football side of fantasy than others. And we're probably going to get to the offensive linemen at some point. So this is kind of a cool way to do that. But yeah, like you said, like coming back to that, like it's not just the volume that matters anymore, right? It's what these players can actually do with those touches and the volume when they're on the field. There's so much more to, you know, like for example, like how many tackles they make or interceptions, touchdowns, sacks, all of those things. There's kind of like a ton of nuance to the PFF grades. I think kind of really suss out like the true quality of each and every player on every single play when it comes to those things. So I think right away, all 22 kind of nails the system for how they choose to score players, in my opinion, anyways.
And in all 22, you're going to have a whole NFL team, right? So I'm just looking at the list here, but quarterback, running back, one running back, not four running backs that you cram into your offensive line, like in some weird parody of what football is. Tight end, couple of tackles, couple of guards, center, and blah, 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 a defense. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So what I'm getting slightly ahead, what's really interesting about this is scarcity versus value. You can build teams in different ways. So you can sort of do that in an IDP league, but really we know that some positions are way more scarce than others and therefore you invest in them, right? You sort of need to have an elite tight end and an edge rusher because there's not many of those guys. There's no point in really going after a star cornerback because he's not that different from another 50 guys. So now that we can look at this, the curve's totally different, right? The number of really brilliant tight ends is fairly similar to the number of really brilliant cornerbacks and similar drop off between those two. So you've got a legit question. Do I go after, I was going to say Kelsey, but he's old. So let's talk about Kittle instead, or Jalen Ramsey. You know, that's a legitimate question that never really has been before.
Yeah, for sure. And there's luckily they've kind of put together this positional weight chart too, to kind of show which, positions might score a little bit better based on their grades, based on how like the NFL values them too, right? So in a case like that, you know, if you're looking for a tiebreaker between a Jalen Ramsey or a George Kittle, you might lean corner, but other people might look at the tight end position and say, you know, it's George Kittle, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller, like who grades well at that position? Not everybody knows, right? But we know kind of who's good. So we might target that word corner. You know, again, it might be a deeper position even still, like you say. So there's a lot of different strategies and ways to build the team, like you said. I think first and foremost, it's probably most people are drafting quarterback first now, right? In a 12-team league. But we'll see. Yeah, everybody's going to have a different strategy. If like where I'm picking in our draft, we have our IDP Avengers League that we still haven't drafted yet, but I'm picking 10th overall. You get a nice second overall spot. So I'm sure we'll see. You get a pretty good option there. Yeah. And
I'm with you. I'll definitely be going quarterback first. Just because, you know, the classic, I think it's Thomas Dimitroff again, quote, which is, you know, if you haven't got a franchise quarterback, you are consumed by the desire to find one. And it's going to be a little bit like that in a way that's not. So let's talk about the positional weight thing a little bit, because I think that's really interesting. So broadly, every week, and, you know, all of the players in your starting lineup, we'll get to that in a minute, is going to get a grade. And it varies slightly by position, blah, blah, blah. But roughly 60-ish average, anything over 90, brilliant. Anything under 50, pretty ropey. Yeah. And then you've got Storm Norton down there getting his 20s and Kalen Ballage and people like that. Yeah. But they're not all just going to be added together for your score, right? Because as in the NFL, your quarterback is more important than, you know, your interior lineman. So it's going to get multiplied by this percentage. That means your total score will have each percentage represented by a certain amount. Oh, I explained that really badly, but you know what I mean, because you've seen it.
But yeah, that's exactly it, right? So for example, on offense, the positional weight for quarterback is 9.78%, so nearly 10%, whereas if you're looking at somebody like a running back, for example, who PFF obviously is behind the running backs don't matter movement, but it's only 3.44%, right? So the positional weight scoring heavily favors the quarterback almost by three times as much. And then you're looking at positions like edge rusher, which is around 6%, wide receiver, which is a little more than 5%, right? You're really looking to build your fantasy team the way that an NFL GM would try to build their team. Right. So attacking that quarterback position first and then hitting on positions of value, unless, you know, you're looking to draft like a linebacker in the first round, which a lot of teams still do in the NFL. Same thing with running back. So there's obviously going to be a few outliers there, but there is some positional scarcity with those positions as well.
Sorry, it just struck me. Can we talk about running back a little bit? So
yeah,
one of the things that happened with running back, you know, this endless argument about how good they are. In the fantasy world, you go, well, running backs don't really matter because so much of what they produce is created by the offensive line. And people sort of understandably go, well, there's no offensive lineman in fantasy, though. So I'm using that running back as a proxy for all those players as well. Okay, sort of, I get it. But that's out the window, right? That's gone because we literally have got an offensive line here. So let's talk about the Colts. Now, wherever you are on the spectrum of Jonathan Taylor's amazing, he's a game breaker himself, or he's running behind Quentin Nelson, who's stupidly good, blah, 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 blah. Now you can put your money where your mouth is, right? Because yep, you can go and get Quentin Nelson if you think he's a difference maker.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right? There's a definitely an aspect to that offensive, like running back production, being related to the offensive line play, right? If the offensive line isn't opening up holes for the running back, there's a pretty good chance that running back's not getting the yardage they need. You look at Najee Harris last year, who had a ton of volume, who's still a good fantasy back, but he really didn't do much on a per carry basis, right? So kind of for running back specifically for this, it's what they're doing with those touches. Can they, you know, add something extra to the holes that are given to them from the offensive linemen? Are they able to add some burst to their play and get a first down? Can they make a good cut and force a missed tackle, things like that? And looking at sticking with the running backs, looking at what the grading kind of looks like for them, some of the things that are more stable, it's one of the positions that is a lot less sticky, I think, year over year as to who grades well, because it's a lot of it is so dependent on offensive line play and things like that. So there's a few things that we do find like are stable, but then, you know, being able to hit on those year over year is pretty wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. What I want to see, and we'll talk about this a bit more, is what different managers in All-22 value. So some guys can be like, oh, I want a blood and gut straight up the middle, smash them, power back. You know, Nick Chubb's my boy. I think that's what quality looks like. And some people are going to go, well, actually, I don't necessarily think that's true. I think in the modern NFL, then being great receiver is more important. So, you know, whoever you want to talk about, that's the sort of back I'm going to put together. And they'll have the James Whites of the world and Alvin Kamara sitting there. And they might both be right. You know, they're all legitimate ways forward. Nobody's going to go, I want a blocking back because, you know, running backs don't block in the NFL. you know this more than me, but the top blocking backs in the NFL block, what, 4 or 5 times a game? Something like that? It's not more than that, apart from a couple of chips. Have I told you my theory about running back? This is really, well, I think it's interesting. So we're getting off the topic, sorry. I'm with you. Offensive line is a massive determiner of running back success. I mean, clearly, we watch football. We understand that it's when you run into a gap, it's much easier than running into a 300-pound man who wants to kill you, generally. That's what my night in the pub was like last night. however, when you look, again, over decent scale, a season scale, then if you look at carries versus yardage, again, you get this really, really strong correlation. Like it's basically a straight line. So how can those two things be true? Either really good offensive lines make more and therefore those backs should be more efficient, or it's not, because that's what we observe. So my theory here is that the way we're picking up when we look at the actual data is that good offensive lines create volume, because you're having a similar sort of production on a per play basis and a macro basis, but because you're doing it more efficiently, you're just creating longer drives and more plays, and therefore you look at the ones that are having to keep on the field and play more, blah 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 blah. Passing league, running backs aren't a good indication of volume anyway. So really the difference in fantasy from good offensive line comes in available touches and volume rather than a per touch efficiency.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that, but it makes sense, right? You look at teams like the 49ers who have good run blockers, the Browns, for example, very good offensive line, so they're going to play to their strengths, right? And that helps create that volume and that production as well. So I love that. So let's see here. What do I got? So one of the big differences I think people might find, like as they kind of play this platform, is that when the player grades are calculated from PFF, they come in, we do them live, but they don't actually go live to the public until Monday morning, usually Tuesday for Monday night football games. But because they're getting reviewed Sunday night and well into Monday morning, those grades, we're not going to be able to see like a live scoring tracker when we're following along our all 22 PFF leagues, which, okay, you know, it could be a big deal to some, but I don't really see a big problem in that, because for the most part, most of us are playing multiple. Yeah, exactly. We're watching the games. We're following along a million other fantasy leagues that we're in as well, that do have live scoring. So it's just kind of like a nice treat to get on Tuesday morning and a surprise for fantasy. But I think that's important to notice, is that there isn't really a live tracker. I know the guys have talked about hoping to get that in there at some point, but I don't know how much that would be possible, just because of, I know how the review process goes, right? So
Now let's talk about that. On your average game, let's say you're reviewing, you know, roughly what, 130 snaps a game plus another 10 special teams or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. When you send it off and you go, I've done this, I've nailed it this week, how many of those plays get sent back to you and someone goes, no, you've totally clowned at the fullback on this play, made a huge mistake, not a big play. Like, what percentage are we looking at?
I'd say it's anywhere. Well, for the most part, like people doing the NFL grading, the accuracy from live broadcast to when it's reviewed is in the 90 percentile, until we turn it around, get the coaches film and stuff like that, and can see it from different angles. So there's definitely probably, 20, 30 plays that you're going to look at and see, you know, there's some discrepancies here in what we saw in the broadcast and then what the review team saw on broadcast and coaches film. So there is definitely always going to be some difference there. So to sort of rely on just the live grades, I think there could be some discrepancies, I guess, from if we try to do live tracking.
But my buddy who watches, you know, highlights of every game every week tells me that I'm wrong on all these players. So it must be way easier than that.
Yeah, there's a lot more that you see on the coach's film, like especially just for coverages, right? You could say like a cornerback busted on a play watching it from broadcast, but you don't know if he's supposed to be playing, you know, in a cover three look or if he's supposed to be playing cover two and he's supposed to be sitting in the flat. We don't know that until we actually see the full scope of the play. So there's a lot of things like that can get changed.
Do you remember that thing on Twitter a few months ago where some dude was like, cover six doesn't exist, it's made up? I mean, like, come on, man.
I don't understand. There's so much nuance to like coverages and things like that, that to say one doesn't exist, a million different coverages exist. They all have their own variations, right? So cover six does exist, for the record. We do track it. But yeah, so that's just a quick note on the scoring.
Can I talk about one more positional weight?
Oh, sorry, buddy. No, go ahead.
The only one that they all make total sense to me. I'm really happy with those. The only one that I feel a little bit sad about is safety. And I think this is really interesting, actually. So safety at the moment is worth 3.78%. So a little bit more than running backs, a little bit less than, or about the same as a guard. So that's not ideal. Now, I sort of get why. And the data is calculated using how much NFL teams are actually paying for players, right? So they're talking with their wallets. So they're not dissembling or lying. What I find, I think safety is really, really important. And not in a per play, because you know, on an average play, rarely is the safety making a great play. So when you're grading games, you're not going to have that many plus two marks for a safety play, right? big interception, crazy chase down, whatever. But there's not going to have that many opportunities to do it because either they're in the box and it's not that difficult, expected levels, or they're playing deep and most of the time they're not going to make a play. But so much of what NFL defense doing now is predicated on safeties. You know, for years and years, you know this anyway, people are like, oh, this offensive guy is a mismatch. He's too fast for a linebacker and he's too big for a cornerback. You go, yeah. The way NFL teams have changed over the last decade is combat that with safeties, right? So if you have a flexible athlete who can do anything on the field, that's called safety now. It's just, you know, we use the term safety, which means a little skinny guy standing in the back shivering. Behind you, you've got a picture of Derwin James' jersey. Great example. He didn't line up deep. And like 2 years ago, when he only played, you know, a little bit, he literally didn't line up deep the whole season. And there's lots and lots of examples of players that do the same thing. So, okay, the individual player might not be getting great grade on any given play, and the NFL aren't paying for that many of them. But the fact that safeties allow you to do those other things is really important to defense as a whole. And I think that's a slight query.
No, for sure. I think, like, just looking at like the defensive side, I mean, linebackers becoming a tougher position for teams that maybe don't have those safeties that can do everything. But for the teams that do have it, nobody's asked to do more on the defense, I don't think, than the safety, right? Because they do, like you said, have to come down, play in the slot. They got to be run support to come down deep. They have to be able to know when to disguise coverages and play deep and come over the top and things like that. There's so much. They're, like they say, you know, the last line of defense, but there's so much more than that. And I do think that at some point we're going to see those positional weights kind of raise for safeties just as NFL start to recognize the importance of them a little bit more. And, you know, Micah Fitzpatrick just got a big deal. Derwin James is in line next to get another deal. Jesse Bates is holding out, hoping that he might get one as well. So there are some good safeties, I think, that could maybe raise that positional weight a little bit. But I'm with you. I think it's a much more important position than what kind of the numbers and the salary cap shows, for sure.
Oh, man, I love safeties. Great position. All right. Should we talk about substitutions a little bit?
Sure. How
that works? So every week, in fact, sorry, before that, so you've got a roster, right? So we've got a 50-man roster. We talk about drafting. We're all going to go quarterback early, get your franchise in. And then generally after that, I've got no idea what people are going to be doing. Some people are going to be going, you know, I want my offensive skill positions because that's how they've always done it. Some people are going to go, I want scarcity and the difference between a Travis Kelce and an Aaron Donald and a whoever is way bigger than it is at some positions. And some people are going to go, no, I'm going to build a secondary and I'm going to be, you know, early noughties Baltimore and blah, blah, blah. So no clue what's happened. But whatever happens, you're going to have 50 players. We'll see what scarcity looks like. We'll see what squad profiles. But every week, you're going to be putting out a starting lineup.
Yep.
Yeah, and your starting lineup is going to be 11 offensive players, 11 defensive players, but there's this auto-sub thing. So basically, if players don't play very much, you don't artificially get a great score. So, yeah, classic example, cornerback only comes in because some other dude's broken for 5 plays at the end, and he bats one ball down on a Hail Mary into the end zone, and he gets a great score for it. Now, it's not fair giving him a 95, because that sort of throws everything out. Now, you guys will at PFF just because you grade every snap and you look at what the average is. And that's how it works. Not in the old scoring system, but the new one. So there's a little bit of both, right? You're sort of trying to build a roster and you're sort of trying to manage weekly lineups at the same time. So interesting to see how that works in practice.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think there's still some element of we want guys that are going to be on the field because of this auto sub feature where if they don't hit the minimum snap requirements, then they won't qualify for a score, right? Or like you said, that example with the cornerback coming in at the end of a game, like we saw that with Isaiah Simmons in his rookie year. Remember, he played like 5 snaps, but he got an interception like early in the season, and he ended up with a good coverage grade in that one, right? So that's not going to count in all 22. We need to be
Kamoko Turay.
Yeah.
We love Kamoko Turay, right? Because he's a really good pass rusher, but he only plays 20 snaps a game and they're all third down, pin your ears back, go after the quarterback. Yeah. And he's really good at it, but he's probably going to be a terrible all 22 player because he's never going to play enough.
Yeah, he's not going to be in your lineups. Yeah, exactly. So, and then the same thing too, like it's another way that this platform kind of mirrors the NFL, right? Whereas if a guy, if he gets injured on the first snap of the game, like say Bobby Wagner got injured on the first snap of the game in week 17, fantasy championship week last year, then someone from your bench would fill that spot to replace them, assuming they also meet the minimum snap requirement, right? So you'd have other linebackers that can step in to replace Bobby Wagner. You're not going to be stuck with a big fat zero in that spot. So that's a really cool, it's kind of like a best ball element, but not quite. It's just that we want to make sure that those snap requirements are still met and that the grades make sense, basically.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. And
carry on, dude.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to talk about sort of best ball anyway. Now, best ball, I support best ball in IDP because it rewards better edge rushers and cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. You know, our ability to predict whether they're going to have a good week is really, really low because so much of that is down to chance and whether the quarterback throws the ball at him and whether the quarterback gets the ball away or not on the pass rush, blah, 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 blah. So we're rubbish at doing that, but we can predict who are pretty good overall. So yeah, okay, best ball fits better with that, maybe not for offensive players. In this one, it doesn't really matter because you're going to get rewarded. So let's use those two as an example. Your cornerback, who, yeah, classic example, the shutdown corner, right? I mean, it doesn't really exist anymore. That's not so much a thing. But let's talk about this hypothetical player, Nnamdi Asamoah, who's locked down his guy the whole game, brilliant coverage, super sticky, and the ball just never gets thrown near him. In PFF grades, that's going to be a good result, right? So it doesn't matter. Or a pass rusher, let's say your guy out there, Rashan Gary, is beating his man every time, getting close to the quarterback, but the quarterback's just getting the ball away because he's playing Tom Brady every week and he's got that pocket movement. Again, great score, right? So you need to worry less about best ball because that's already built into the scoring.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's the whole thing about, you know, it's every single play that matters and that grade kind of coming up with the score. And yeah, people who were like frustrated with Max Crosby for IDP last year, that, you know, he wasn't getting them a sack every single week. They didn't care about the PFF grades, right? I promise you won't be frustrated with Max Crosby if he's continuing to do that again in this format, right?
What's up, everybody? Josh here with the IDP Show. Now, if you've been listening to our show for any amount of time, you've probably heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where league members get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about, and the IDP Show is making it happen for listeners. We've partnered up with RSO to offer new members 10% off their annual site fee. Just use promo code IDPShow after your 14-day trial is complete. So, what are you waiting for? With RSO, you have free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Like we said, it's the closest thing you can get to being an NFL general manager. Think it sounds complicated? It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online Fantasy Front Office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. Just remember to use the promo code IDPShow to get 10% off the site fee. Again, that's promo code IDPShow to get 10% off the site fee for your leagues in 2022. Fantasy just got real with Reality Sports Online.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Talk about Max Crosby and whether you believe it. I'm so fascinated him this season because he was so good last year. He led the NFL in pressures and he's just got that brilliant motor. Do I trust him to do it again this year? I want to.
I know. I hear you. I tend to think that, you know, he did it and he looked good doing it, that he could do it again. But I wouldn't expect that. This is the same level of, I guess, PFF grade and then like pressure rate and all of those kinds of things. Like, I think he had 100 pressures. He was the only player in the league that had 100 pressures. To hit that mark again is going to be very, very difficult. But he does play a ton and he looked really good out there. So I don't know. I tend to believe that he'll be close to that and then just kind of convert a little bit more sacks too, even if he doesn't create the same amount definitely. Of pressures, right?
I've just looked up, by the way. Last year, he rushed the passer 173 times, played the run 40 snaps and dropped 10 snaps. So 80% of the time he's coming after the passer. That's which is hilarious.
Yeah. And now he's
his teammate, Al-Qadir Muhammad, 57%. He's an interesting player as well. I wonder how he'll do in all 22, because Muhammad is a solid, decent, good NFL player, but he's a terrible pass rusher.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, it depends, I guess, you know, how good of a run defender he probably is, because it's kind of like Sam Hubbard, right? Like, Sam Hubbard's not a great pass rusher, but he's a decent run defender. He's probably still going to be usable in like a depth player type role. I kind of look at a lot of these guys, like how good they are for NFL purposes. They could probably be similar to for the like all 22, because they're going to be on the field and they do a decent job enough to not lose their job. Obviously it's a smaller scope because we're a 12 team league or a 10 team league, whatever. It's not 32 teams. So they're going to be on the fringe of starting for fantasy purposes. But I like that one. Al-Qadir Muhammad, actually, especially going to Chicago too. Eberflus, it's still his system. So it'll be similar, but
Or the Bengals is a good one, right? So you talked about Sam Hubbard, who is your classic blue-collar, lunch pail, stops a run, plays inside a little bit. And then you've got the other side, Trey Hendrickson, who's an incendiary pass rusher, but is a worse player against the run than me.
Right.
And mainly just stands there getting blocked and looking at piles of someone else has made the tackle. So they sort of score pretty similarly in PFF terms, but wildly different sorts of players. So it'll tell us quite a lot to watch people go after that. And hopefully that will sort of educate people on what different sorts of players look like.
Yeah, for sure. Like Micah Parsons, for example, right? He grades really well as like a pass rusher. His grade against the run wasn't as strong. So you'll see guys score well in a variety of different ways too at the same position, which is kind of cool. And you know, there is some production based to the grades as well. So like you said, with the cornerbacks, they need to be targeted. Are they, you know, they don't have to necessarily break up a pass or make a tackle on a play. If they're in close coverage, they'll get a positive grade for things like that, but they still need to be targeted, right? So there's a little bit of production grades. We are actually working on a process that grades all coverage defenders in separation, even when they're not targeted. So that hopefully gets rolled out eventually and then gets applied to this format, because that would be pretty cool too, to see how cornerbacks, like if there really is any more shutdown cornerbacks, if they still exist. So that's kind of cool. Anyways, I'm rambling.
You know the answer. Who was the most targeted cornerback in the NFL last year?
Kenny, I think, right?
Of course it was Kenny Moore. So, yeah. You know, Kenny Moore has a great season as an IDP, racked up tackles, right? And the average IDP person, okay, Kenny Moore's really good. He had a really good player 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Marlon Humphrey. And they're the most targeted players in the NFL. So either they are really good and we're right, or in which case NFL offensive coordinators and quarterbacks are really stupid because they're going out of their way to target really good players, or maybe we're a bit wrong. I mean, there's probably a little bit of both, but really interesting question.
Yeah, definitely, right? It's the whole Trayvon Diggs thing too, again, right? Everybody loves the corner from the previous year, what they did, you know, production-wise. Trayvon Diggs didn't have the best PFF grade off the top of my head, but, you know, he had a bunch of interceptions, so people love him for IDP. And it'll be interesting anyways. It's a fun new way of kind of looking at things other than, you know, just being a fan of a team or from a fantasy perspective. There's so many different things to look at, which really makes this cool.
So you're telling me you don't get a great grade when you give up more than 1,000 yards?
Right, that's right. Coverage. He did give up over 1,000. I couldn't remember if it was exactly 1,000, but yeah, he gave up 1,000 yards in coverage. And I remember one of our NFL writers at the time, Deontay Lee, who's with The Athletic now, he had kind of, you know, brought this to the attention, and that, and it found its way to Cowboys Twitter, and they hated him for it. They went after him and, you know, talked about the interceptions and things like that. And he kept trying to explain that it's more than about just like seven plays that a player's made in a season. And it's pretty funny to see sometimes the how fandom can get so crazy that they overlook 1,000 yards given up.
Right. Next pop quiz. Which linebacker led the NFL in yards allowed last year? And I'll give you a clue. He also gave up more than 1,000 yards. First linebacker in years to do that.
Over 1,000. Wow. Oh, man. It's going to be somebody. I have a feeling it's probably like a Devin White or somebody like that. I know Devin White was bad at it previous years.
Yeah, Devin White, you and me have talked about this before. We both have a problem because he can't stop the pass, and that's an issue. It's Jordan Brooks. So Jordan Brooks is an absolute liability. But, you know, IDP world is convinced he's really good because he played 1,100 snaps or whatever. So right. Jordan Brooks, according to primary coverage numbers from PFF, 1,010 yards allowed. Second place, Deion Jones, 875. Mm-hmm. Third place, Bobby Wagner, 679, again, because he played a lot. So Jordan Brooks... over 1,000, third place, less than 700. That's incredible. I mean, he was getting victimized out there.
Yeah, that's rough. That's, and you know, to be fair to Jordan Brooks, the linebacker position gets picked on, right? Like it's such a hard position to play. But yeah, over 1,000 yards. I mean, that should tell you what it is right there. He's not going to be as good as what IDP people want him to be or think that he is, right? So
yeah, no NFL linebacker has good coverage numbers because mesh. Yeah. Is a really good play, and you can't really defend mesh very well, and it looks bad on their numbers. So.
Yeah, exactly. And like if you watch a linebacker try to play zone coverage, they sit in the hole. As soon as their feet are flat, they're screwed. That's all they could do is they stand, and then once their feet are planted, the quarterback sees it, and they're taken advantage of every single time. They don't move the same way that a corner or a safety would.
Kenneth Murray, whilst we're talking about Chargers, right? Kenneth Murray has got an elite squat, the best squat in the NFL. He sinks down his thumbs between his ankles, but he does it quite a lot, and he looks like a duck having a toilet break. So he's pretty easy to go after.
Yeah, for sure. all right. Well, let's get into maybe some of the strategies that. So we've kind of touched on. Obviously, we're going for quarterback early. How we would want to kind of build a team. I'm curious, kind of what you think. Say you're drafting. I won't say from the two spot because I don't want you to give away our your strategy for our.
No, league, no. For I'll, example. I'll talk about it. I'm more interested in seeing what happens. So yeah, I'll definitely be going quarterback there. What I'll be doing. And you know, this is probably stupid because the other guys in the league will probably listen to this. I will be hoping to try and boost Justin Herbert or Josh Allen up. So somebody takes him first overall because I want them. I want Mahomes. Give me Mahomes. Yeah, he came off a year last year where he wasn't the best. That happens. Variance happens. Players aren't brilliant every time. But I'm sort of hoping I've got a shot at getting Mahomes there. If I don't, I will feel, maybe I'll go Herbert, but I'll feel pretty sick about it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't blame you. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the differences too, right? People want quarterbacks who add something to the run game for fantasy purposes. So I think Josh Allen is going to be one of those guys that is going to be highly coveted because, you know, thinking that, you know, he's going to add something on the ground as well, where it doesn't really matter to his overall PFF score. I mean, maybe, you know, a couple plays here and there boost him a little bit, but overall on what he's doing, the main things that matter is what he's doing from the pocket and the passes that he's making, right? So somebody like Mahomes, who again, he didn't have the best grade last year. It was a bit of a down year. He takes chances. So he ends up with maybe a little bit more turnover worthy plays and things like that. But he also has a ton of like big time throws that almost no other quarterback could make, right? So those are the things that even if they don't end up as completions or whoever his wide receivers are dropping the balls because he doesn't have Tyreek Hill anymore, he's still going to get positive grades because he's making those throws and he's putting the throws where they need to be. He's super accurate when it comes to things like that. So I think that makes sense going for somebody like Mahomes.
I mean, yeah, I think only Johnny's ahead of one of those. Yeah, let's hope. So hopefully Johnny's. The second round should be more interesting. The first round is basically going to be, you know, pretty much young franchise guys coming off. And we'll talk about age in a little bit, because I'm normally sort of write off age a little bit. Here, I'm way more interested in it. Second round is going to be really good. The second round is going to come back, and we'll see at what point someone goes, you know what, I'm sitting there looking at Kirk Cousins or Trevor Lawrence. Maybe I'll just go Aaron Donald instead, or whoever you pick. That second round, when I want to see what the run looks like and whether people are diving into those elite players elsewhere, or whether people are going, I just want to lock up two quarterbacks and I'll sit there. So Mac Jones is probably going to be a top 25 pick, something like that, who, again, not a very good pick in traditional fantasy, but potentially has got a long career of excellent, efficient passing ahead of him. Could be a really good all 22 player.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right. The second round is where we really start to see everybody's kind of strategy. I remember, so I got to do the beta test last year for this league, and I was somewhere in the middle to late first round. So I remember taking Tom Brady. So I didn't really factor in age as much, just because I knew how important the positional scarcity was for the quarterback position. And I know Tom Brady is going to be a really good scorer in this system. He was actually the number one overall scorer last year, even at whatever he is, 44, 45 years old. So you might want to try to take a guy like that and then, you know, follow him up with like a younger quarterback, like you said, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, if you believe in him, whoever.
Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, we talked about. Yeah, those guys are going to get taken early, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I imagine Joe Burrow, I think they have him as the number one ranked quarterback for all 22, but that's because he was the number one ranked quarterback last year in PFF grade. But I was trying to look more at like 3-year grades, and to see who was kind of the most like on a bit of a larger scale. And it is these older quarterbacks, right? Like Aaron Rodgers, for example, is the number one guy. Actually, he's technically in total score, he's number two behind Tom Brady, but looking at like stable grades, so what they do from a clean pocket, what they do in a straight drop back, no rollouts or things like that, first and second down, no play action, throws past the sticks, and limiting negative yardage or negative plays, I should say. Aaron Rodgers ranked first in what the kind of model that I put together. And he's, again, he's an older guy, but he might fall. He might fall to the back half of the first round because people are going to be more dynasty focused, but definitely somebody that if you're looking to win now and you still want an elite quarterback that's going to be, I mean, a major scorer in this platform, going for somebody like an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I mean, Kirk Cousins, I think he's not a sexy name. People don't like Kirk Cousins, but he grades really well in the PFF system because he limits his mistakes, right? He makes the throws that he needs to make, and he doesn't really turn the ball over as much, right? So things like that. But
couple of players I'm really interested to see how they do here is Derek Carr. Derek Carr was a deeply boring quarterback, and then he got Grudened, and Gruden made him into a really efficient, excellent, deeply boring quarterback. and it remains to be seen what he'll do under Josh Mishandles. And the other player I'm interested in is Matty Ice, because I thought he really looked like he'd taken a backward step last year. Now, we'll see how he does with the Colts. He's probably a quarterback, probably the number one quarterback I would not be touching. Not because I think he's going to be rubbish. I think the potential payoff is probably the worst.
Sure.
Versus risk.
Right. No, that makes sense. And especially going to a new system, right? We don't know exactly what he's going to look like and things like that. He's getting older. And you could look at these 3-year grades and say, this guy did so well over this 3-year time period. But then you look at last year alone and you see somebody like, Matt Ryan, Ryan Tannehill, for example, guys that didn't look as good, you could start to kind of get a little bit more worried about those kinds of guys and maybe take some shots elsewhere on, the Kyler Murrays or Matthew Stafford even, who is an older quarterback, but does still grade well for the most part. So,
Well, you've got Lamar Jackson here, right? So, I mean, a few interesting things. One, we talked about a 3-year period. 3 years ago, he was a unanimous MVP, and everyone went, his touchdown percentage is going to stay the same. And the second year was okay. And then last year, he had, 2,900 yards passing, something like that. So I think he's a really good example of what variance can look like. And in a normal fantasy, you go, it's fine. But because Konami code, rushing yards for a quarterback are a cheat code. But you guys don't care about that. It sort of doesn't matter if you're moving the sticks and making first downs and efficient and not turning the ball over, you're good.
Yep. Yeah. And those things are all taken into account, right? Like the, what kind of first downs they're making. Like if he does run for a first down and it's a good play, he's going to get a positive grade for it. But also if he fumbles on that play, he's going to get hit pretty hard with like a negative 1.5, right? So there's some pretty big differences, especially like the turnover worthy plays, you know, throwing the ball right at a defender. If that defender drops the interception, we don't care. You're getting downgraded for a turnover worthy play, right? So
Jimmy G, I mean, I love Jimmy G and I love Kyle Shanahan so much. And I think it's great offense and great fun to watch. But for all of his fast action and good decision-making and accuracy, Jimmy G just loves throwing the ball to linebackers. He does, inexplicably.
Yeah, for sure. Jimmy G would be a risky one on here, I think. And yeah, and then like just looking at like second round guys to maybe look at, you know, I think I went edge rusher last year after taking Tom Brady. I think I took Nick Bosa or Myles Garrett. I can't remember which one. I ended up with both, but I went with those two guys, I think, back to back, second and third round, while other teams were going like wide receiver and things like that, which is understandable in this format. But yeah, looking at somebody like an Aaron Donald, for example, who has graded consistently well throughout his entire career, you know you're getting a player at a very scarce position that's going to be a big advantage over other players in the league. So I think it does put those guys in the conversation for an early pick, maybe not the first round, but second, third round. Micah Parsons, for example, linebacker, like we said, does not grade well in coverage. They don't grade well overall. They're actually the lowest average PFF grade across all positions. So it maybe boosts up some of those guys that we have confidence in that they're going to be grading well. Micah Parsons, maybe. We've only seen 1 year of it. But, you know, guys like Fred Warner, Lavonte David, Bobby Wagner, who we know we can trust consistently, probably become a bit more valuable.
Yeah, I'm with you. Second, third, fourth and fifth round is all going to be the toss up. I'm looking at is, do you invest in the positions that have a higher weighting, i.e. wide receiver, offensive tackle and edge? Or do you look at the positions where there's a very steep curve? Linebacker, we've talked about this way before. There is a very, very small group of excellent NFL linebackers and a load of guys who play but aren't that good. Very similar to tight end, very similar to interior line in terms of that distribution. So if you have got one of those guys that you really trust is going to be a differentiating factor for a while, that's more important than an extra percentage or two in terms of weekly points.
Yeah, definitely. And with Aaron Donald's new contract as well, he probably bumps up that positional weight a little bit as well next time they calculate it. So, you know, he becomes a little bit more valuable there as well. But yeah, that's a good point. Like teams are going to look at those kinds of things. And I think it'll be interesting to see which of those strategies ends up being more successful or maybe it's, you know, it different levels of success in various different ways, right? So it's pretty cool. It's again, one of the things I really like about it is that everybody's going to have a different approach at building their team, as opposed to everybody attacks running back early and then everybody loads up on wide receiver. We save IDPs till the end. You don't have to do that with this format. There's a number of different ways that you can approach it and build your basically your NFL roster, right?
Yeah, let's talk about rookies here as well. So one of the famous things you can do in a dynasty startup, Ryan McDowell calls it the productive struggle, is basically invest in youth, except you're sort of going to suck a little bit and then have a great draft the second year and suddenly end up with a stud young team. Is that my idea, do you think? Because the rookies notoriously play pretty badly in the NFL, right? And that's going to hurt more than it does in standard fantasy here.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's one thing that I still haven't even figured out yet is how kind of rookies fit into maybe these player grades, because you can't just copy and paste like college dominance or player grades from college to the NFL. They differ pretty wildly depending on the player and what their development looks like in the NFL. So coaching and all kinds of things like that go into it as well, which I think really adds another similar NFL experience to this platform for sure. And when it's time to do rookie drafts, I think every year, because we have to really do the work and project kind of how player skill sets and ability is going to translate to the NFL. I think that makes it really cool as well. And yeah, I don't know that like doing that productive struggle type thing is going to work, because like you said, the there's not a lot of rookies that hit the ground running in the NFL. And if they don't necessarily, then they might not, you know, get the opportunity later on either. So depending on the team and the situation. So seeing where rookies fit into like the startups is going to be pretty fun. I remember Trevor Lawrence was drafted pretty highly last year in the startup. It would have been the first round, but it didn't really work out in year one. Can it work out in year two? Maybe. Different coach, different system, we'll see. But there's a lot of question marks around rookies, more so than it would be for regular fantasy, where you could project volume and where they might sit on the depth chart, right?
Yeah, I find that super fascinating. Trevor Lawrence is a great example, because most rookie quarterbacks are pretty terrible, and then half of them have a big jump in year two, and half of them just don't, right? Josh Rosen, hello, we're looking at you. The worst. Oh, there's a good question. Who is the worst quarterback in modern NFL history? Is it Blaine Gabbert or Josh Rosen, or someone else? Because I think it's Rosen.
I was going to say, I want to say it's Rosen, just because Gabbert still gets chances now and then. He's still playing, where Josh Rosen really, I mean, he really, really stunk every time he had a chance. And you know, so some of it was like offensive line play in Arizona, but it can't just be put on that. He was truly awful. So yeah, I think it would be hard pressed.
He was bad when he wasn't pressured, right? There was no defenders near him. He was throwing the ball at the opposition. I mean, just hilariously bad. Anyway, poor Josh Rosen. I'm sure he's laughing at me. I'm sure he's sitting there in his beautiful house playing golf and feeling terrible about it.
In Miami or wherever he is now. I don't even know what team he's on, if he is on a team at this point. So yeah, there's some bad ones out there. These things don't always work out, right? But I think that's again kind of what makes this platform so fun, is we really, you know, especially with rookies, we have to do a little bit more work, because the sample size of what they can do on the field is a lot smaller. Even if they do play a ton in college, it's against much lower competition levels. It's you know, completely different game than the NFL. So trying to project who's going to do well from college to the pros is a pretty tough ask. And I think it's going to make rookie drafts really interesting. I haven't had a chance to do an all 22 rookie draft, but I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see, especially like this year's class of quarterbacks that people weren't in love with. Where do they start to fall, especially considering how important quarterbacks are to this platform?
I mean, Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley. Legitimate chances to be the first player taken overall in rookie drafts this year. Right. I mean, probably one of the receivers, actually. But, you know, those two. So here's an example that I sort of want to illustrate this with. In my thinking, I might be wrong, is linebacker. So in normal IDP, we look at, I mean, we talked about this on draft night. We watched it play out in round one. You go, Devin Lloyd, he's the guy. He's clearly the top IDP linebacker in this class, because he's going to play instantly. And he's probably going to play 1,100 snaps as long as he's fit. Although he went, whatever it was, 10 picks after Quay Walker, because he's not going to get on the field. In all 22, I'm going, do I trust the Packers staff and defense to bring Quay Walker on and look pretty good, even if he's only playing 50, 60% of snaps, more than I trust the Jag staff to develop talent? Yes, 100% I do, because I don't trust Jag staff to develop anything. I don't trust them to develop a persecution complex. So that's going to be looking at it in a totally different way. And I sort of haven't got my head around it yet.
Yeah, it is. And I think that example specifically is a good one, right? Because you look at who the Jags brought in as their defensive coordinator. It's the Bucs linebacker coach, right? They had two different linebackers. They had Lavonte David, who grades really well in our system, and he's a solid veteran. But they also, when Mike Caldwell was there, drafted Devin White. So he would have been in charge of developing him, right? And bringing him along. So doesn't grade well in the PFF system. So can Devin Lloyd avoid that with his talent? I don't know.
I watch every Buccaneers game, and Devin White's always around the quarterback. He's got loads of sacks. Of course, he's brilliant. You're anti-Bucs. Right, like, I'm obviously being sarcastic there, but this is a really good point, right? When we look at the NFL, the most important thing is stopping the pass, and sure, pass rushing is that. But if we talked about flat-footed linebackers, if that's what you're doing on 4 out of 10 snaps, that's a massive problem, because the teams just keep converting downs.
Yeah, yep, definitely. And they get dinged for that every single time, right? So, it's a good point. I don't know. I mean, this like we haven't had a chance to dive into like our draft yet and to kind of see it all play out, which we will, I think, July 30th, I think we said. So still yeah. a little while away to see kind of how it all plays out. But there really isn't anything else quite like this platform out there for fantasy purposes, other than maybe like Madden franchise mode, which I still think, you know, this is a better way of doing that, because you're playing against actual people and you don't have the cheat code of being able to play against a very easy computer or something like that. So you're using real players in this case and building an NFL team and seeing which strategies work and which don't. And I think like even like trading, I think, is going to be really kind of interesting. Like if you're looking to trade for a quarterback, for example, you're going to be paying almost NFL prices to try and acquire that quarterback, right? You might have to give up multiple first round picks to land a starting quarterback for your roster if you miss out on one, or if one doesn't work out or retires or whatever happens. There's a lot that that mirrors the NFL in that sense too, which is really, really cool. And I think something that we've all kind of wanted for fantasy football purposes. And I'm seeing the excitement grow around all 22 quite a bit, just from like Twitter and stuff like that, which is very cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, agree. Can I come down slightly the other way? So obviously, sure. Big love fest here. We can't wait to play with the platform. One of the things that I'm really interested to see how it works, I'm a little bit skeptical of, is combined lineup setting and scarcity. So two things, really. They're pretty different. So first one, you can basically use different formations, right? So on offense, we've got 11 personnel, i.e. three wide receivers, one back, one tight end, 12 personnel, two tight ends, two receivers, one running back, or 21, two running backs, two receivers and tight end, right? You know, whether you can use a fullback on there, I don't know. Bring back the fullback. We should talk about this, actually, because, you know, everyone is like, fullbacks are dead. Yeah, but the fullbacks are most used by some of the smartest coaches in the league. Right. So that's no accent. Anyway, and on defense, you've basically got three options, right? You've got 3-4, a 4-3, and a nickel, which I can't see here, but I presume is a 4-2-5 nickel with three corners on there. So that all makes sense. And those, I sort of get that. If it was down to me, I'd change those defensive settings, because a 4-3 and a 3-4 make up, what, about 20% of snaps in the NFL? It's not that much. So maybe let's talk about that. But I'm sure those guys will listen to it. In fact, I know they will, because I've had this chat with them. But that leads into scarcity. So because we're looking at 12-team league and you can have slightly bigger and you've got a fixed 50-man roster, I still think some positions are going to be relatively easy to find. So with corner, obviously, you want to have good corners and that curve is going to look very different and much more different to IDP. But there's always going to be decent starting cornerbacks available. There will, because there's 150, 160 cornerbacks that play every week. So you're not going to get through them. And that's going to have an impact on value. Not as much as it does in normal leagues, but it's still going to be relatively easy to get by because you know you can always make up for it. So I don't think it's a disaster. I certainly don't think it's going to kill it, but I'm a little bit intrigued to see what happens there and see whether you can maybe look at changing the size of rosters or limiting number of players and rosters. I don't know. I just want to see it.
Yeah, for sure. Like I think it does leave some openness to like the waiver wire and how much we can, you know, add every single week compared to what the NFL offers, because obviously, like you said, the 32 versus 12 teams. And there are positions that are going to be more readily available than others, right? So even offensive tackle, I mean, you're starting two, right? And there's 12 teams, so you have 24 offensive tackles. That doesn't even make up half of what is available in the pool, right? So there's definitely less positional scarcity with some of those positions, and you're able to kind of take advantage of that and kind of learn as you go through the weeks, right? Which players, you know, you want to start and which ones you could try to replace off the waiver wire, which is kind of fun. So there's still that element of like typical fantasy that exists with this. And for those people that are active in leagues and are able to kind of adjust in season, it's going to be still good for them. And it doesn't just end at the draft, for example, but it's a good point for sure. I could see what you mean there exactly. Anything else that you want to cover?
Just want to talk about age a little bit. We sort of hinted about it earlier, but I think it's really interesting. So normally my stance is, particularly in IDP, I sort of don't care how old they are because I only care about this year. The chances of good players staying good year after year, you know, this famed 10-year starter that people talk about is a dream, and it's very rarely true. Okay, it is a little bit at quarterback, and it happens at some positions, great tight ends, great interior linemen stand out, but it's very, very rarely true everywhere else. In this system, I'm much more of a believer about it. So the example I put in here was Jalen Ramsey versus AJ Terrell. Terrell, however you say his name, right? Ramsey, better player, almost certainly, probably will be a better player for next year. But man, AJ Terrell came up really fast last year. Mm-hmm. And I believe in cornerbacks keeping up that level of really good play year after year, much more than I do believe in the difference between those two players remaining the same. So I can't believe this. I'm coming round more to the idea of over-investing in youth in Dynasty, which I never thought I'd be doing.
but it makes sense, right? Because it's so hard to find those good players, like you said, that can actually last in the NFL. And I think AJ Terrell is a really good one. Like, there's guys that are going to emerge as young stars, right? We're not always going to hit on them. Like, if people were convinced that Jeff Okuda was going to be, you know, an NFL starter for 10 plus years, I mean, it's still early for him, so I don't want to throw him under the bus quite yet, right? But he has
good luck to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, last year he got hurt, but man, that rookie year was...
It was bad. Yeah. So there's guys like that, right? Like, where if you find one, or if one exists and it is sitting on the draft board for you, you probably want to take that chance and attack that position so that you can have it locked up for a long time, because being able to find another one, it doesn't come along very often, especially for, like you said, that long-term kind of dynasty purposes. So that's a good point. And quarterback, probably a good example of that as well, right? So, you know, if you do draft a Tom Brady like me, late in the first round, trying to find his replacement after that is going to be tough. And quarterbacks come out every year. There's a lot of hype behind them, but not all of them, you know, turn into Andrew Luck Andrew Luck's retired. Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert or whoever, right? So we're often spoiled by some of these guys that do hit the ground and forget that there's a lot that actually don't.
I mean, 50% chance in the first round, right? The last few years are good examples. This win, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, all the other guys. Yeah, they're all going to be amazing. And, you know, those first two guys that came off the board have got a decent chance of never being really good NFL players, even after a year. Now, short optimism, we hope they turn around, blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's a question for you then. Put on the spot, who are you drafting, Lavonte David or JOK at linebacker?
Oh, God, two guys that I love. Yeah, so that I think that's one of those situations where you lean towards youth, right? Lavonte David is getting so much closer to the end of his career, I think, than where JOK is, obviously, after just 1 year. And it's a smaller sample size, but man, the difference, I think both are kind of these good coverage linebackers that you like, guys that, you know, can move and do what the NFL wants. Does that mean they're going to be targeted more and grade poorly? Or does it mean that they're actually going to come up with positive plays and coverage and grade well? It's hard to say, especially after just 1 year of JOK, but I think I might just lean JOK in that situation. Although Lavonte David's really good. That's tough. I don't like that you asked me that question.
One other thing I want to talk about as well, I've literally just thought of this, is what about borderline positional cases? We've got players broken out in five defensive positions, and we talk about offensive line. Actually, it's probably relevant here. How are we going to handle where they are? So Kyle Van Noy, great example, spends half his time on the edge, half his time in linebacker. Isaiah Simmons, he spends a lot of time running up as a bona fide pass rusher, and a lot of time in the slot. So if you didn't know anything about Isaiah Simmons, someone just showed you where he lined up, you'd go, oh yeah, it's a safety, because he's in the box sometimes and he's in the slot sometimes and he rushes the passer. That's not very different to Harrison Smith or right. Derwin James. So that's really interesting. Mike Gesicki, the other one, right? We know Mike Gesicki is a wide receiver, a slot receiver, who happens to be quite big and chunky and white, so people assume he's a tight end. But you know, I don't know how he's classified.
Right. No, yeah, exactly. He should be, I think he's on PFF, he's still listed as a tight end, right? Because that's what, for depth chart purposes and things like that, that the we have to stick with, but we often do make changes for players that are playing more towards one position than another, like just as far as alignment and stuff like that goes. So Kyle Van Noy, for example, I think is slightly more listed as slightly more snaps as a linebacker. So I think he gets the linebacker designation for us.
It goes week by week. So I really struggled with this last year because I give a player one position and I use him as that one position all season. And, you know, what I think is logical is you look at which position he's played most and you call him that. Now, this sort of doesn't work with safeties because go into the details of it later. But for Kyle Van Noy, that would change on a weekly basis. You'd go, well, I look at his snaps this week and played more time as linebacker over the course of the season. I look at it next week and he played a lot more edge and he flip-flopped. So do you change the position every week? Really difficult.
Yeah, and I know Micah Parsons posed that issue for us last year because I think there was a point in the season early on where he was listed as an edge because he started to play so much more there, which was more
week 3 or 4, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it was early on and he was seeing those snaps. So I think we listed him as an edge. I can't remember where it was, if it was in Ultimate or if it was actually on the the premium stats website. But that was a problem because I knew that it wasn't necessarily the position that, you know, he should be listed at. It was more just a position that he played because of necessity, right? So yeah, that's a good question. If things will change in season, I think that probably goes down to what PFF decides, and I wish I knew the answer to that. I probably should, but I don't. So we'll see how they handle it. It's something that I'm actually I will try to track and see if guys change based on where they're lining up and if it happens in season or not, because that could it could create some issues for all 22 purposes, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if they lock a guy in
much. You know, Kyle Pitts is a really good example, right? So if Kyle Pitts is a tight end, you know he's going to be a tight end, then you didn't list him earlier because you hate him on your list of elite. But, you know, a lot of people still tell you he's the greatest, most talented player in the world. And he, you know, tight end is way more consistent, right? So you can probably lock him in as one of those top five tight ends for many years. If he's wide receiver, absolutely not. He could easily be the 20th best wide receiver in the league, or worse or better. So I think that'll make a big difference to his value.
Definitely. Nope, that's a good call. And yeah, apparently I forgot I do hate Kyle Pitts. No, I like Kyle Pitts quite a bit. All right.
David Njoku is a good example. He's a slot receiver as well.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so just one quick note on the tight ends and stuff. It does add more to it, right? Because it's not just about their receiving ability where, you know, Kyle Pitts, David Njoku, Mike Gesicki, they're not necessarily pass blockers or run blockers or anything like that. So they don't get that added bonus in their PFF grade, where the guys that are good at it, George Kittle, for example, we've all seen the highlight tape of him blocking guys 10 yards upfield. He's going to end up as a great overall PFF grade because he's doing everything well, where it's not just receiving. So that's a positive towards him anyway. So we'll be interesting to see if he gets the first tight end off the board or if it's still Kyle Pitts like it is in most dynasty leagues.
Classic Gronk, right? Who is up there with the best blocking tight end in the league at the same time as being the most dynamic weapon in the league. So you can find one of those guys. So this sets up really interesting. In all 22, if I say Pat Freiermuth or TJ Hockenson, I'm not totally sure. You know, they're relatively close to me. In normal offense, I'm going Hockenson because, you know, I think there's more chance of him hogging receptions and getting the volume. But I mean, that as a football fan, not as a fantasy fan, those are the questions I want to be asking myself. That's more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I can't wait to see kind of how this draft plays out. And I think the guys mentioned that there was going to be a mock draft option at some point too before our draft. So we should probably
dive in. I talked about it and they never organized it. I will sort it out.
Okay. Yeah. We could throw that back in the chat and try to get something going because we still got quite a bit of time. And I think it would be fun to, especially after this episode, to dive in and see exactly how things might play out. And we'll switch up the order to make sure we don't give away our exact strategies as well.
Yeah, I'm going to do that this weekend. So if anybody out there is listening and fancies coming into a mock draft with us and also is at all 22, then use that voucher code that we talked about earlier. That will chop off 40% for you. Sign up, drop me and John a note, and we can do a little draft together.
That'd be really fun. Yep, for sure. So There we go. We're just a little bit over an hour here, so we'll stop at that. I think it was a good conversation. I hope everyone that was listening gives all 22 a try. I mean, the guys, Bobby, Chris, and Ray, they put a ton of great work into this product, the website, the customer service of it all as well. Just doing everything they can to make this kind of the best fantasy platform available. And I think the great part about it too is that it's going to continue to grow and evolve as they add and upgrade features throughout the year. So I'm very excited about that. I know Tom's excited, and hopefully you are as well. So remember, if you are interested in getting in now, use that promo code IDPshow for 40% off your league. You can hit up all 22 underscore PFF on Twitter if you're looking for leagues to join as well, or start one with your friends to see who among you is the best candidate for an NFL general manager position. Tom, thank you so much again for coming on. I appreciate you taking some time away from the pub to talk fantasy football with us.
It's always a blast. Thanks for inviting me on, John. Loved it.
Awesome. And you can be found at Tom Kislingberry on the Twitter, at DynastyLeagueFootball.com for all of your work. And if you enjoyed this All 22 discussion, the actual creators of this platform actually host a regular podcast as well, talking all things 22. So go check out Bobby, Ray, and Chris's show. I think it's just on YouTube right now, but it's titled the All 22 Podcast. So, for those of you that want to hear Tom and I discuss IDP fantasy football, which we didn't get into a ton in this episode, make sure to check out the latest episode of the Read and React podcast coming soon, because there will be plenty of IDP discussion in there. And then I will be back in a couple weeks on this show talking IDPs with my guy Z-Mags, discussing 2022 IDP breakout candidates. So I hope everyone will tune in for that. And until next time, IDP's out.